That's not what the biblical word means. I'm always rejoiced when I read a commentary or a word study and they point out what this word means, because I hear this taught, mistaught a lot, either by implicitly or explicitly. The word simply means to see one's self with accuracy. For a Christian, humility means I see myself as a sinner who has been saved by God's grace and mercy because he loves me. There's such a perfect balance in there, and that's exactly the opposite of being down on yourself. If you break the compound word down into its parts, it means to lower one's view of oneself to an accurate appraisal. Remember Chuck Smith one time talking about this and saying he hears people once in a while who say things like this: "Oh, I'm so ugly. I hate myself." And he said, "No, if you hated yourself, you'd be glad you were ugly." The problem is, yeah, there are people that have a really wrong view of themselves, and to have an accurate appraisal, their view needs to be raised to God's standard in some ways. But most of us take pretty good care of ourselves. It's weird how twisted we are. A good counselor has a way of pointing this out, that sometimes at the root of what looks like humility, there's really pride. I think I'm a better person than this. And real humility says, no, I'm not. In fact, real humility says, when I look at God and I see real clearly who he is, I want to fall on my lips and say, why do you have anything to do with me at all? And then God says, well, because I love you. Do you see that perfect place of balance? If all you're doing is telling people that they're sinners, you're not telling them the whole story. Which is why in a legalistic church where you're trying to please an unpleasable God, you always go home feeling worse than you did when you got there. And in some of the liberal churches where it's all about how wonderful you are and achieve your full human potential and nobody's talking about sin, you're not getting the whole story either. One of the things I love about my doctor, and boy, he's a great guy, he has a way of telling me the truth about things that need to be fixed and at the same time encouraging me about how healthy I am and how well I've done in the things that I'm fixing. You know what I mean? I have great respect for parents that are able to do that. Sometimes... And spouses that are able to do that with one another. I'm sure you guys talked about that in the marriage class, about what building up your spouse doesn't mean you lie to them. And there may be some things that definitely need to be addressed and changed, but you can say, you can appreciate the things that are good. And everybody, hands down, everybody learns better with affirmation. Everybody changes more easily with affirmation. But we have to tell people, one another, the truth. One of my favorite quotes, I believe, is from Abraham Lincoln. I've been giving him credit for it for 30 years. So I'm in big trouble if I haven't gotten sued yet. So Abraham Lincoln is purported to have said, all of us are ignorant only on different subjects. It's sort of the flip side of what people have told me, who I'm in deep awe of their knowledge. And they've said, look, we're not smarter than you. We just know stuff you don't know. And you know stuff we don't know. And the flip side of that coin is there are all people who are ignorant about things that you're not ignorant of. But then you're ignorant of things that they aren't ignorant of. And so our view of things, to be accurate, our view of ourselves, so that we rightly represent the Lord in this world, is to stand in that place of not being down on ourselves, but just simply see ourselves accurately. And this is my first rabbit trail, because I think there are some enemies to this that Satan capitalizes on. And the first one is comparison. When we compare ourselves to other people, either, well, how can I say this? Because I do this all the time, and God's trying to break me of this. My lifetime habit is to compare myself to people who have abilities that I don't have. Musically, just name something. Name people that have skills that I don't have. I'm comparing myself to them, so I always feel like what a loser I am. I don't compare myself to people who can't play keyboard as well as I do. I don't compare myself to people who can't play guitar as well as I do. I compare myself to James Taylor playing guitar, which is really silly because he has twice as many fingers as I do. And they're twice as long. So I'm handicapped. Why should I? I'm joking. It's... amazing the things people pick up on in a study. I wanted to tell you a story because it was a classic example of how Satan can use this to divide people. I was very blessed when I heard some of the responses for the women's meeting, because one of the things that came out of that with every woman I've talked to is to look around and realize, wow, these people, some of them have strengths I don't have, some of them have weaknesses that I don't have, but we all think we're the only one. And everybody's looking at me like I'm weird because, but everybody's thinking that way. And it's a lie. In my first church, like I've said many times, it was quite large. I have five different women's ministry leaders because we had a lot of women. And some women clicked with certain other women and some didn't. So we had a lot of women's ministry. One day, one of the women came into my office, and if you're listening, you know who you are. And she was sobbing. Her eyes were all red. Her face was all red, and she was crying. And I said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And she said, "Well, I'm going to have to leave the church." And I was stunned. And I said, "Is everything okay? Are you moving, or what's happening?" She says, "No, I just can't stay in this church any longer, knowing how you feel about me." And I said her name, and I said, "Sweetie, I love you. You're one of my favorite sisters that I have. What have I done?" And she just broke down and started sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And she said, and I said, "What is it? What have I done? I've tried to always show you how I love and appreciate you." And she says, "Well, but you hate my piano playing." And I had to fight very hard to not laugh, because I said, "Ruby, I gave it away. I said, "Ruby, I didn't even know you played the piano." And she said, "Then why did you make that face at me?" And she just started sobbing violently. I had no idea what she was talking about. And she said, I always loved your piano playing, and I play the piano, and you probably didn't know that. But she said, "One day, I'd like to come down to the church, and I'd like to play," because we had a little grand piano. And she said, "I love to play that piano." And she said, "One day I was playing," and she said, "You stuck your head in the door at the back of the church, and you made a face at me." And she said, "That went right to my heart, and I'm going to have to leave this church because you don't think I'm as good of a piano player as you." And my brain is spinning. It was a long way from the back door up to the piano. It was a big church. And I remember I said, "Ruby, was I wearing my glasses?" And she said, "No." I said, "Ruby, I can't see 12 feet without my glasses." And I had her attention. And I said, "Do you know, I stuck my head in the back door of the auditorium because I wanted to hear who was playing the piano so beautifully." And I said, "What you saw was not me making a face at you. What you saw was me squinting to try to see who it was playing the piano so beautifully." Okay, now what just happened? Somebody got lied to in a way that they were ready to leave the church. Now, I can make all kinds of psychological evaluations saying, you know, if she hadn't been thinking about herself, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, we do. But when we make comparisons with other people, we set ourselves up to be lied to. You've been around. If you've been in many churches, I've seen more churches split over stuff like this than any frontal attack by the enemy. Little personality conflicts, little things where people's, the things they're sensitive about get offended. And of course, the devil's not inactive. One of the things that would protect us is just to not compare ourselves to other people, just to appreciate their gifts, to appreciate our gifts. And we've had a lot of people leave this church, a surprisingly large number of them, because they didn't feel that their musical gifts were properly appreciated. I appreciated them. But for me, I made decisions on using those gifts based on how it fit into the Holy Spirit leading the body and not on them getting enough face time. It wasn't always received that way. It's dangerous. It's inaccurate. It's an inaccurate view of ourselves, which is the exact opposite of humility when we compare ourselves to other people. Can I offer you something? God doesn't compare you to other people. I'm going to say that again because some of you may not be in the front of your mind. God doesn't compare you to your smarter brother. He doesn't compare you to your cuter sister. He doesn't compare you to anybody. You are supposed to be unique, and I'm supposed to be unique. I find that thrilling because, to be honest, I don't want to be like you. And I don't want you to be like me. I want each of us to grow the way God made us to be. I can learn things from you, but I don't have to be you. Chuck at a pastor's conference once told the story, again, which I love, of David bringing sandwiches to the battlefront. When Goliath is down there in the Elah Valley and he's, you know, yelling Philistine obscenities and mocking the God of Israel. And he's so huge that all of the Israeli army are just shivering in their boots. Even Saul, and Saul was a big dude. And Saul was afraid of him. And David's coming down passing out, you know, the falafels or whatever. And after a while, he hears a few of these insults coming up and he says, isn't somebody going to go down and shut that guy's mouth? And they're all, no. You see how big he is? And he said, yeah, but he's blaspheming our God. Somebody needs to go shut his pie hole. Somebody needs to shut that guy up. David said, I'll do it. And he's just a kid. He's not just a kid. He's a runty kid. A howdy-doody kind of a kid. Freckles, ruddy, the Bible says. So he gets ready to go down there, and they said, well, we can't just send you off like that. Here, we'll give you the best suit of armor that we have. And so they gave him Saul's armor. Now, Saul is a big, strapping, studly dude, you know, like quarterback, linebacker-sized dude. And they put Saul's armor on David, and David couldn't move. He tries to turn, and he turns around inside the armor because it's just the wrong size. And he sheds all of this stuff, and he says, I can't fight with this. And he says, who needs anybody's armor? He says, I go in the power of the living God. And that's what he told Goliath. And Goliath is laughing and feeling insulted that they didn't send a bigger guy. And David said, hey, you stand against me with all your big muscles and all your equipment, but I stand against you in the name of the living God. And I'm going to feed your body to the birds. And he did. And the point that Chuck was making, and it was a great point to make at a pastor's conference with 800 pastors, and some of them pastored churches of 10,000 people, and others like myself pastored little tiny churches, and you're trying to be faithful, and it's impossible to not compare yourself. He said, you don't have to wear anybody else's armor. Nobody else's armor is going to fit you. God knows that. You can do the job that God gives you to do by simply going in the power of God. He made you who you are. You don't have to have anybody else's skill set. And I think it was a great relief to me to hear that, especially was because I just came here. And the only other Calvary chapel in the whole state was Ken's church up in, and I'm not him. I'm so not him. And I remember one day saying, Lord, nothing's ever going to happen because I'm not him. And the Lord said, I didn't call him to be here and do this. I called you to be here and do this. I need to hear that all the time because it's so easy to look around and it brings discontent more than any other thing. And then we start trying to change people and we start trying to change our circumstances. We start trying to change ourselves and so a lot of it's unnecessary completely. So being completely humble means I see myself accurately. That's going to mean someone else's stuff isn't going to fit me. Really, like Gideon's 300 middle-aged fat guys who couldn't bend over and touch their toes, God will give the battle to the guys that are listening and obedient. Doesn't matter how in shape they are. Never does. So that's another, and one more little point. And this is very confusing, I think, for a lot of people. The closer that we get to the light, the more we're going to see what we really look like. And I remember the Lord telling me when I was very, really confused about this because I knew I was growing. And I knew I was changing. But I was also seeing things I'd never seen before, and it was not pretty. So I thought I'm going backwards. And he said, no, son, you're just getting closer to the light. And you are always worse than you thought you were. This is one of the things that marriage does. When now you're not around this person, when you're all good smelling and on your best behavior, wearing your best clothes, carefully coiffed and groomed, now they see you warts and all. And you can only put up a front for so long, and then they see who you really are, and we hate that. My grandmother was the one that first told me the thing about finding out what you really look like by getting closer and closer to the light. And she said, there's an aspect in which you are going to change and you're going to get better. You're going to be more like Jesus, but there's an aspect of that. Sometimes that's not going to look pretty while he's showing you what you really look like. And then we're always faced with the reality of, do I blame other people? Do I go to a different church? Do I get a different spouse? Or do I look in the mirror and say, that's what I look like? Oh, Jesus, please fix me. Oh, and he loves that. He loves that prayer. The amazing thing is that he sees us in the dark. We're all handsome in the dark, aren't we? And then when the light comes on and we see what really looked like, but see, the thing is, when he bought you and when he bought me, he can see in the dark. He knew what you look like. He's not fooled. So he's not put off by the things I'm seeing as I grow closer to him that are not pretty to me. He saw they didn't just appear. They were always there. And he intends to change them. And he loves me anyway. He loved me when I hadn't changed anything. So that's an important thing to have, I think, clear in my mind in order to be completely humble. I'm just on verse 2. To see myself accurately. Here's another thing that happens because of pride. I've seen people thrown into nosedives of depression because they finally see something about themselves that everybody else has always seen. And it destroys that self-image that they've had, and they just fall into a nosedive of depression. And that's the wrong reaction as well. Because we're loved and we're treasured by God. And he's going to change us. He's going to grow us up. But part of that I have to see what I really look like. I'll tell my drywall story just so it gets on tape. When I was remodeling my first house, I decided to save hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and I decided not to hire a drywall contractor. I said I'd do it myself. I understand the basic concept. Never done it before. Watched other guys do it. So I'm in this house. Everything's being run off a generator. I have a 25-watt light bulb hanging in the middle of the room, and I did my drywall job, and it looked pretty darn good to me. So I called my friend Ron, who was a drywall contractor, who I knew was working just down the street, and I said, Ron, stop by. And I said, have a look at my job. And I'm thinking he's going to walk in and praise me and everything. And he walked in, and the first thing he did was he tripped over something because there was only 25 watts of light and he couldn't see. So he walked out to his truck and he brought in a 250-watt quartz halogen, burn hole, send signals to the moon, burn holes through solid steel kind of a light. And he brought it in and he plugged it into the generator and he walked over and he held it up against the wall and he sighted down the wall and he smiled and he said, Bob, come here. And my perfectly flat, seamless wall looked like a relief map of Patagonia or something, or the Andes. I mean, it was all over the place. And you know what my first thought was? Turn off that light. Before you turned that light on, I was a really good drywall guy. Was I? No, the light just showed me something that I couldn't see. Isn't that a great picture? The Lord showed me later that night. He often does this with me. He'll give me some sort of vivid illustration of a spiritual principle. He said, Bob, this is why you don't like some of the stuff you're saying. Because I'm turning the lights on. You need for the light to be turned on in order to see it. We don't like that, do we? So part of being completely humble as I come close to the light to see what I actually look like. I don't compare myself to other people. My father had a fabulous way. I still admire him so much for this. My brother and I were so close in age. We had so many similar aptitudes, but we had completely different personalities. And my dad never compared us to each other. You can ruin kids by comparisons with their siblings. It's not fair. And my dad never did that. I wish that I'd ever had kids so that I could just practice that stuff that I've learned, because it made a huge difference. Everybody else compared my brother and I to each other. In high school, they did. We were only one grade apart. And all that does is breed division and resentment. We were talking after Gwen's memorial service. Monica was saying, did you notice how everybody that talked about Gwen felt like they were her favorite? And I thought, yeah. See, that's like Jesus, isn't it? Jesus looks at you, and he looks at you, and he looks at you, and he treats you like you're his favorite. And you know why that is? It's because you are. He can do that. So that's the first thing on my list of five things, so I better get going. Gentle is the next word. I don't know what any of the other translations say, but I know the root word is the word for meekness. In the Greek language, it's the word proutes, P-R-A-U-T-E-S. I don't often study the Greek classics. I'm not smart enough. But I did notice something that Aristotle said about this word, proutes. And it was just brilliant. He said, it's the perfect halfway point between being too angry and being never angry.